From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. The classic tale of Frankenstein began as a dream, well, a nightmare for an unwed teenage mother in 1816. One dreary evening, Mary Shelley was challenged to come up with a good ghost story. She went to bed that night with all kinds of ideas in her mind, but it wasn't until she drifted off to sleep that a story presented itself to her. Later, she would say she saw a man kneeling beside the hideous phantasm of a giant when the thing moved. Shelley wrote, "If only I could contrive a story that would frighten a reader as I myself had been frightened that night." Turns out, she did. It's Halloween, and today we're presenting a live radio adaptation of Frankenstein, staged by Plan B Theater Company. So we invite you to settle in and listen to Mary Shelley's ghost story. The curtain goes up after the news. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. And now KUER, XM Public Radio, and Plan B Theater Company in Salt Lake City present Radio Hour Frankenstein.
Did I request thee, maker, from my clay to mold me, man? Did I solicit thee from darkness to promote me? Paradise lost.
Captain, a sledge approaches!
What is that?
A sledge? We are hundreds of miles from land, Lieutenant.
A telescope for the captain, quick. The man's moving fast. Starboard side, Captain.
A telescope for the captain.
And the devil!
Here you are, Captain.
Oh, yes. I see it. The driver is enormous.
He looks 8 bloody feet. All hands!
How the devil did he get here?
Hello!
Bring her about, mate!
Yes, sir.
Let's rescue this loony before he gets himself killed. The ice will be breaking soon.
No, it is useless.
Captain.
We stay where we are. I will not be wrecked on the ice for the sake of a foolish traveler.
To Mrs. Margaret Seville, England, 5 August. My dear sister, so strange an accident has happened to us that I cannot forbear recording it. On the vast and irregular plains of ice common to the north, we perceived a low carriage, a being which had the shape of a man, but apparently of gigantic stature, perhaps some savage inhabitant of...
Another one's come! A second sledge right to us!
I went up on deck, Margaret, and found the sailors talking to someone in the sea.
We're not pirates! Come on here!
On the side of our vessel, there was a second sledge, like we had seen before. It had drifted toward us in the night on a fragment of ice. Only one dog remained alive, and the man's face was blue with frost. He was not, as the other traveler seemed to be, a savage. He was European. The sailors were trying to persuade the man to climb aboard, but he stood stubbornly still until I approached.
Here is our captain, stranger. He'll not allow you to perish on the open sea.
You are the captain!
I am. Why do you refuse to come up?
Will you have the kindness to inform me whither you are bound?
Whither I am bound? Sir, you are on the brink of destruction. I believe my vessel, wherever bound, is your only salvation.
Where do you sail?
This is a voyage of discovery. We sail for the North Pole.
Excellent. I consent to come up.
You consent? Your sledge here has only one sick dog. Your limbs are nearly frozen. You are dreadfully emaciated. I never saw a man in so wretched a condition. Sailor, help him up.
Yes, Captain.
Yeah, just look at him. He's wobbling like a top.
I need no one's help. I can climb up by myself.
There he goes!
Catch him!
How long have I been asleep?
Ah, he stirs. Welcome aboard the Prometheus.
How long?
2 days, in and out of fever. Why did you come so far up on the ice?
2 days?
Yes.
Damn it!
Why did you come so far?
To seek one who fled from me, one who flees again thanks to... Pardon my rudeness. I should thank you, sir, for bringing me aboard, for saving me. Please forgive the tone I took. Without the warmth of your stove, I would be dead.
So the other man, traveling by sledge, you were pursuing him?
You saw him?
Indeed.
Do you think the breaking of the ice destroyed him?
Well, I cannot say with any certainty. The ice broke at midnight. So this fellow...
Blast! And I gather your men have not seen him. You are sailing north, correct?
At the moment, we are anchored due to the ice, but yes, as I told you, we are voyagers. We seek the North Pole, the land of eternal light, the power that attracts the needle, dominion over the elemental foes of Earth.
Oh, unhappy man.
Unhappy?
From only a few words, I hear it. You share my madness, don't you?
Do I?
You have drunk the intoxicating draught.
Which is?
Oh, you are like a mirror to me. Your every expression is...
I fail to see what is funny. I have come here in the service of science. The boon of our expedition could be the discovery.
Yes, yes, you have drunk deeply of the chalice.
Meaning?
Hear me, Captain. Let me reveal my tale, and I promise you, you will dash fame's cup from your lips and turn back this boat. I am by birth a Swiss, and my family is one of the most distinguished of our country. My parents were patient, charitable, encouraged an ardent love of learning, a love that, alas, would become a grim passion for me. I was 5 years old when my mother rescued an orphan of Milan from a filthy shack to be my playmate and eventually my bride. Her hair was the brightest living gold, her blue eyes cloudless in the molding of her face, so expressive of sensibility and sweetness. Elizabeth. Years later, a cherubic little brother would come too, William. The world was a playground, a secret I wished to divine. I was raised, you see, to be curious, inquisitive, driven.
Victor Frankenstein, always reading.
Well, as long as we are confined by the weather, I might as well read.
Might as well? You cannot imagine a more thrilling occupation of the senses on a rainy day.
Elizabeth, shh.
Do not shush me.
Father is sitting over there. He can hear.
So? He knows. I told him we held hands. And I am adopted.
Still.
If we were to embrace, Father would not flinch. Come, sit by me.
Elizabeth, please.
Shut your boring, musty book and sit by me.
Cornelius Agrippa is not boring.
Come listen to the thunder with
me. He was a pioneer, after the elixir of life.
Life is sitting right here, Victor.
Victor, what's that you're reading? Did I hear Cornelius Agrippa?
Yes, Father.
My dear Victor, do not waste your time with that sad trash. You are to find your friend Clerval. Mother says he wants you and Lizzie to put on a play of his.
If, instead of dismissiveness, my father had taken the pains to explain to me that the principles of Agrippa had been debunked and that a modern system of science had been introduced, I would have certainly thrown Agrippa aside. But the casual waving off of it assured me that my father was by no means acquainted with the contents of this book. So I continued to read it with great eagerness, and my mind began to bend entirely upon the elixir of life. I dreamed of banishing disease, of rendering man invulnerable, saving us all from our infirmities. I vowed to uncover it. A clue to it came when I was 15. I witnessed a terrible thunderstorm advancing from the mountains of Jura. I beheld a stream of fire striking an oak. Nothing remained but a blasted stump.
Victor, what in the world are you doing? Come inside. You are drenched.
Elizabeth, it's electricity.
What of it? Come inside.
Electricity. Look at the oak tree, Lizzie. This is the work of electricity.
Yes, I am aware. Now please come in before it repeats its work on you.
Electricity. Electricity. Electricity.
I became a student at the University of Ingolstadt. Before leaving, my mother died of scarlet fever, which enticed me almost to stay. But in the end, I saw in her extinguishment a challenge. I would continue the sacred struggle of ancient alchemy. I would vindicate Agrippa. I would conquer death.
God, how fortunate you are, Victor. You fly for Ingolstadt, and I remain chained to the details of commerce. Instead of Clerval the actor, I am Clerval the mercantile.
Your father is still inflexible.
He has debarred me from the hope of a liberal education. My books shall be account ledgers. No poetry, no plays.
You will write me often, Victor?
Absolutely.
I have a promise.
Yes, again, yes. Now cheer yourselves both. My journey has a return. Remember this old familiar face. Someday you shall see it on a statue. Within a week at Ingolstadt, I met Professor Waldman, a progressive man, very unlike his uppish colleagues. The other teachers, like Professor Kremp, scolded me for my study of alchemy.
Good God, in what desert land have you lived where no one was kind enough to inform you that these fancies are 1,000 years old?
But Professor Waldman was different. He appeared about 50 years of age, a few gray hairs covering his temples, but those at the back nearly raven. He was a short man, but remarkably regal, and his voice the sweetest I had ever heard.
The ancient teachers promised impossibilities and performed nothing.
The modern masters promise very little, but they penetrate into the recesses of nature and show how she works in her hiding places. They ascend into the heavens, perform miracles, and mock the invisible world with their power.
Professor Waldman.
Yes.
May I walk with you?
If you like.
Your lecture just now. It was magnificent. I am already your disciple.
After only course overview?
So what do you really think of the ancients? Albertus Magnus, Paracelsus, Agrippa. I sensed an openness.
They were wrong in the application of their wisdom, but their efforts have been a benefit to us all.
Yes, I feel similarly. Also, I was hoping to hear what further books you think I should procure.
Study every branch of natural philosophy.
Professor Waldman took me into his laboratory and explained to me the uses of every machine and offered me access to them. Natural philosophy, algebra, chemistry, anatomy became like food to me. I forgot my family.
Dearest Victor, no matter how I busy my mind, it tends to think about the day you first moved my hair out of my face. Tends to wonder what your lips feel like. Please write, yours for life, Elizabeth Lavenza.
My progress was rapid, my drive, the astonishment of the students, my proficiency, that of the masters. 2 years passed. I never visited home.
Dear Victor, little William is growing like a vine. We flew kites today. He asks about you. You really should see your brother before he is as big as you. My heart is in your hands, Elizabeth.
I never wrote back. I was enrapt. With every moonrise, I asked myself, from where does the principle of life proceed? Where is the root of the tree? Where is the fountain that feeds the root? I soon saw that the answer was not in a book or in a glass jar. I realized that to know life, one must know the stink of death. And so I turned to the many churchyards of Ingolstadt. Maggots writhed on the pages of my journal as I traced the pathways of nerves and drew the wrinkles of brain stems. I saw how the worm inherited the wonders of the eye and brain. And then a sudden light broke in upon me. After days and nights of labor and fatigue, I bestowed animation upon lifeless matter. The shriveled arms of a vivisected toad shuddered and stretched into life again. It limped to the edge of the table and leapt away. It lives. It lives. It lives! You're listening to Plan B Theater Company's Radio Hour, Frankenstein. We're going to take a brief break. Back in a moment. This is Radio West on KUER and XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. We now continue with Radio Hour, Frankenstein. It lives. It lives. It lives! I began the creation of a human being, a man of gigantic stature. Smaller body slowed me down, so to keep my knife moving, I settled upon building a giant. I occupied a solitary room on the top floor. I tortured living animals in order to learn. My cheeks grew pale, my ribs protruded, my eyeballs started from their sockets, and often my human nature turned with loathing from the pungent rot. But on a dreary night of November, I beheld the accomplishment of my toils. The rain pattered dismally against the panes when, by the glimmer of the half-extinguished light, I saw the dull yellow eye of the creature open. How can I describe my emotions at this catastrophe? His limbs were in proportion, his hair a flowing, lustrous black, his teeth of a pearly whiteness, but these fine features formed only a more horrid contrast with his watery eyes. The eyes that seemed the same color as the dun white sockets in which they were set, framed by a shriveled complexion and thin black lips.
He flailed, smashing the instruments of his birth, struggling to adjust his sallow eyes to the candlelight, denting the metal basin that was his womb as he kicked. Stitches were popping, black blood oozed. I rushed out of the room. I threw myself on the bed in my clothes, seeking forgetfulness. I was numb, full of denial. I left it in the laboratory, hoping it would stutter back into stillness without my midwifery. I slept. I thought I saw my sweet, soft Elizabeth in the bloom of health. I kissed her, but her lips became livid with the hue of death. She became my mother, her corpse shrouded, grave worms crawling in the folds of the flannel. I woke. The wretch stood over me. His jaws opened, a grin wrinkled his cheeks. No! You keep away! No, I said keep away from me, no! I ran through the barren, dim streets of Ingolstadt until my feet were throbbing and raw, until a fever forced me under the steps of a church.
Victor? Victor Frankenstein?
Clerval?
It is you! My dear Frankenstein, what are you doing here in the street? You look a fright.
Clerval, you're here.
Oh, yes, my father relented at last. My voyage of discovery to the land of knowledge begins. Are you all right?
It gives me the greatest delight to see you. How is my father?
He's well, happy. A little uneasy that he hears from you so seldom.
And my brother, and my sister, Elizabeth. Tell me that she's all right.
She is healthy. Why?
She is. She isn't rotting. Gray. Maggots.
Victor, sit back down. You're ill. I'm going for a doctor.
My sister. My wife. My mother. She...
Get your gun!
Oh, there he goes!
Drink this.
How very good you are to me, Clerval. This whole winter you could have been at study. Instead, you're bringing me broths and dabbing my brow.
Yes, well, I expect to be repaid.
I am undeserving of so true a friendship.
Hush.
I abandoned you, Elizabeth.
Victor, really, you must make at least a symbolic effort to forgive yourself. The body is mending, so let the mind. Write to your sweetheart, your father. They weary of obtaining their news through me. Here, answer this. It arrived in the post this afternoon, from your father.
Victor, I know you have been very ill, but I must inflict a further pain upon you. William is dead. William, that sweet child who smiles, delighted, and warmed us. He has been murdered!
Clerval.
Yes?
We must leave for Geneva.
What is it?
Tonight!
What has happened?
Carry me home, my friend! Having read half of the letter, I knew. They found William stretched on the grass in the woods, unhidden, blue, and motionless, the print of the murderer's finger on his slender neck. And somehow I knew it was him. It. This thing I created. The road ran by the side of the lake, becoming narrow as I approached my native town. I wept as we galloped by the summit of Mont Blanc in the night. The familiar was no comfort to me. Grief and fear towered over me. And then as we came within a league of home, I perceived in the gloom a figure stealing from behind a clump of trees. It was the wretch, the filthy fiend. He was at Geneva. He had done it. The deformed demon survived and was the murderer of my baby brother. Our favorite servant, Justine, was tried for the murder. A picture of my mother, which William was known to have had at the time of his killing, was discovered among Justine's belongings. And yet I knew she was guiltless. We all knew. Elizabeth, especially.
Rip the boy's throat!
Red-handed she was! Guilty, guilty, guilty! Why waste time?
Your Honor, I am well acquainted with the accused. She nursed Madame Frankenstein, my mother, in her last with affection and care. Notwithstanding all the proof against her, I do not hesitate to say I believe and rely on her perfect innocence. As to the bauble on which the chief proof rests, if she had earnestly desired that picture, I should have given it to her, so much do I esteem her.
Pretty words do not prove a thing.
Wasted eloquence. Justine was hanged. The fangs of remorse tore my bosom as I rushed away from the scaffolds. I bore a hell within me. I was the true murderer. William's end was worked by my thrice accursed hands. I wrought the monster and... But I could say nothing, as I could say nothing to Clerval as he cared for me in the feverish aftermath of my hubris. They would think me demented. So I bore it alone. For days after the hanging, I sat by the lake with Elizabeth, lost in the hurt of her pale sky eyes, longing to tell her the truth, and knowing I could never.
I no longer see the world as I did before, Victor. I used to look upon accounts of vice and injustice as imaginary, but now misery has come home. Men appear to me as monsters.
So you have said.
Justine was innocent. I know she was innocent. But when falsehood looks so like truth, truth like falsehood, who can assure themselves...
Elizabeth, stop! I refuse to analyze it further, and I cannot stomach the worry I see on your face. Let us speak
of... The worry on my face? Victor, there is an expression of despair upon you sometimes that makes me tremble. And I know it is not confined to the deaths of William and Justine. What happened while you were away?
I was ill. I overworked myself, overexposed myself to the vapors of the dead house.
Victor, what will revive your heart?
Why do you suggest it needs reviving?
These events have affected me, Victor. God knows how deeply. But I am not so wretched as you. And I am not alone in my appraisal. Father sees it too.
He does.
Yes. And, Victor, if while you were at Ingolstadt, if you found yourself... That is, if you find yourself no longer disposed toward... That is, whatever afflicts you, I hope that the accents of love, my love, can hold a healing power. Oh, Victor, do not be so silent. What evil is stalking you?
Not the tenderness of friendship, not the beauty of earth, of heaven, nor the accents of Elizabeth's love could save me from the woe, from the guilt... I suddenly left home. I hiked into the Alpine Valley. Waterfalls dashed around me. I passed ruined castles hanging on precipices as I ascended and descended. I climbed a glacier, wishing the blue waves of ice would numb my memory as well as my fingers. At the tops, glittering peaks in the sunlight above the clouds, a joy swelled in me unbidden, and I exclaimed, "Wandering spirits! If indeed ye wander, allow me this faint happiness, or take me away from this life." As I said this, I suddenly beheld a figure galloping toward me with superhuman speed. The monster. Devil! Do you dare approach me? Do you not fear the fierce vengeance of my arm wreaked on your miserable head? Begone, vile insect, or rather stay that I may trample you to the dust, and oh, that could restore the murder!
Do your duty toward me,
my God,
and I will do mine toward you. Comply with my conditions, and I will leave you in peace.
Your conditions?
Refuse, and I will glut the maw of death.
Abhorred monster, the tortures of hell are too mild a vengeance for thy crime.
Be calm. I entreat you to hear me. Have I not suffered enough that you seek to increase my misery? Life, although it may only be an accumulation of anguish, is dear to me, and I will defend it. And you would do well to remember that you wrought me more powerful than yourself. But I am thy creature, and I will be docile to my natural lord and king, if... thou wilt perform thy part, which thou owest me.
I will not hear you, fiend. There can be no community between
us. Misery made me a fiend. Make me happy, and I will be benevolent and good.
Begone, or let us try our strength.
How can I move thee? Listen to my tale. The guilty are allowed by human laws, bloody as they are, to speak.
I would that speech was barred to you, so evil to me is the issue of your lips.
You wish destruction upon your creation, and the blockade of his only means of sympathy? For a year, I squatted in a dirty kennel, listening to cottagers so that I could render this appeal. Listen to my tale.
His words had a strange effect upon me. I pitied him. And yet, when I looked upon him, the filthy mass that moved and talked, my heart sickened. He was as horrid as I recalled, skin stretched too tight around the eyes, translucent but elsewhere, sagging and full of folds like a dried date, lips as black as the oak tree charred by lightning when I was 15, twisted and stiffened into a leer. But a feeling of pity arose in me. I followed him to a cave to at least hear him out. He said to me,
"It is with considerable difficulty that I remember the first days of my being. I remember the forest near Ingolstadt, hunger pangs, thirst. I remember finding a fire left by wandering beggars. I was overcome with delight. I thrust my hand into the live embers. I remember greedily eating a peasant's cheese, and I remember the punishment. I remember discovering your lab notes in the cloak I must have taken before quitting your apartment. I regarded them as my birthright, although I could scarcely recall how I had gotten them. I stared at the weird symbols whenever I could. Finally, I found a sanctuary, a low, unused hovel next to a cottage. The wood was rotting, and there were numberless chinks admitting the wind, but it was dry. I laid it with straw, and for months I observed the cottagers, an old man, his son, and the son's new bride, a poor but happy threesome I came to think of as mine. The old man, blinded by disease, played for them, for me, the sweetest airs I still have ever heard. I wept so often, wanting to be also at their hearth, wanting to be embraced by them, touched. Serendipitously, the cottage's young bride spoke hardly more than me in the native tongue, and so I learned alongside her. I found books dropped beside a nearby road. Paradise Lost was my favorite. I read it by the moon.
Better to reign in hell than serve in hell,
yes, Frankenstein. I was happy. I left firewood for them. I shared in their sorrows. I loved them.
Hello? Who is there?
Pardon this intrusion. I am a traveler in want of a little rest. You would greatly oblige me if you would allow me.
Come in. Unfortunately, my children are away, and as I am blind, I may not be able to.
Do not trouble yourself. I have food. It is only the warmth that I need.
Whither do you travel?
I am going to claim the protection of some friends who I sincerely love and of whose favors I have some hopes. I am at the moment deserted. I look around. I have no relation or friend upon the earth.
Do not despair. To be friendless is indeed unfortunate, but if these friends are good...
They are good and kind.
Where do these friends reside?
Near this spot.
Father, we decided that without you...
Please, I am friend! I was ruined! I could have burned the cottage and them and filled myself smiling with the shrieks. But I ran. Tearing up trees, I ran until I happened upon your little brother, William. I was sleeping in the woods. He came trotting into a meadow, talking playfully to some unseen friend.
This is it, men. The resting place of the Grail. At last.
As I gazed on him, an idea seized me that this little creature was unprejudiced and that I could educate him to be my friend and companion. So I put myself in his path, showing myself to him totally in the bright sunlight. Please, child, I do not intend to hurt you. Please stay and listen to
me. Let me go, you ogre.
No, you must come with me.
Let me go, or I will tell my papa.
Let me be your papa now. I will love
you. My father is Alphonse Frankenstein, and he will have you hanged if you hurt me.
Frankenstein? Where is he? I said, where is he, boy? I assured that the serving girl was blamed, and at the time it made me swell with triumph. But now that I have found you, Frankenstein, I will do you no harm, if, that is, you create for me a female.
A female?
I demand a creature of another sex as hideous as myself. Refuse?
I do refuse it.
Do me this one kindness.
Create twice a wickedness like you.
We would quit the neighborhood of man, leave you and your family alone with the sympathy of one like myself.
Well, the sympathy of one would not be enough for you. For the last hour,
you... Do not leave me alone, my maker.
You've talked of how desperately you desired to be welcomed.
You begrudge it me.
I begrudge the pleas of any who have shown so much malice.
Grant me a companion and I will drop it. Refuse and I will revenge my injuries. If I cannot inspire love, I will cause fear.
You ask me to make myself base in my own eyes.
You are in the wrong, Frankenstein. My vices are the children of a forced solitude that I abhor. Make me an equal, and my virtues will rise. Link me to the chain of existence from which I am now excluded, and I will leave Europe forever and every other place. We would make our bed on dried leaves and be content with acorns and berries. I swear it to you. I swear by the sun and by the blue sky.
I was silent for several minutes as I reflected upon all of his arguments. I thought of the loathing and scorn he had met with at the cottage after performing so many kindnesses. I thought of him hiding in ice caves. Despite myself, I felt a wish to console him.
I demand an answer. Will you build me an Eve?
I agreed. But the work was too grotesque to be performed with Father and Elizabeth at hand. They, I resolved, would never know of my sin. Therefore, I left for England under the pretense of requiring a holiday before Elizabeth and I were to be wed. Clerval joined me.
This is what it is to live, my friend!
But the buoyancy of his gay demeanor could not lift the stone of dread pressing upon me. I soon separated from him, renting a house on the Orkney Islands. The island was desolate, scarcely enough grass for a few miserable cows. Aside from myself, there were only 5 gaunt and scraggly-limbed persons on the isle. I had to hurry back and forth to the mainland in a rowboat through the fog in order to obtain the necessary parts. Then, one night after the moonrise, I stood over the desiccating torso of my Marquise. Absent-mindedly, I traced my fingers over her leathery breast, and then the thought came. Even if they were to leave Europe, one day they would want a child. A race of devils could be vomited on the earth, threatening the existence of man, filling our towns with terror, and I would be the inflictor of the curse. I looked up There at the window was the fiend, a ghastly grin wrinkling his black lips. He had followed me, so eager was he to have his bride. But it could not be. I hacked her to pieces! No! I revoke my vow! She shall not live!
You dare break your promise?
I will never create another! Never!
No? Then remember this, Frankenstein. I will be with you on your wedding night.
Never! 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 Never!
I will be with you on your wedding night!
You're listening to Plan B Theater Company's radio adaptation of Mary Shelley's classic tale, Frankenstein. The story continues after a break. This is Radio West on KUER and XM Public Radio. This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. And now the conclusion of our Halloween radio drama, Frankenstein. Never! 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 Never!
I'll be with you on your wedding night!
I collapsed. A fever was coming on me. Every vein felt like a white, hot wire. I thought that the fiend would throttle me then and there. Kill me! Kill me, you mangled brute! But he had fled, and to my chagrin, I craved for his coarse fingers to crush me. I forced myself to collect the corpse I had pummeled and shredded. I slipped on its entrails as I packed every piece of my lab. I rode far from the shore, so far that the land was obscured by the pall of night. Wheezing my muscles like lead, I tossed everything into the deep. In the bottom of the boat, drifting, I fell into a fitful delirium. Hours later, I floated ashore. I stirred. Rough men were about me, and the geography was strange.
I think this is him.
Who else could have done it?
What's he got in his boat?
My good friends, will you be so kind as to inform me where I am?
Yeah, you'll know that soon enough. Though it may be you've come to a place that'll not prove much to your liking.
Why do you answer me so roughly? Surely it's not the custom of Englishmen to receive strangers so inhospitably.
I cannot say I know what the custom of the English is, but it is the custom of the Irish to hate villains.
The man insisted that I follow him. I was accused of murder. A man's body had washed ashore, and the fishermen had seen me in my boat in the guilty black of night. I protested, but then they showed me the bloated gray victim. It was Clairval, my childhood friend. The head twisted almost off, the vertebrae jutting through the ripped purple flesh. I fell to the floor and began raving in the presence of the men and the magistrate.
Oh, God, Clairval, have my murderous machinations deprived you also of life?
How's that? Your murderous what?
Two have I destroyed already, but you, Clairval, my friend.
You see, Mr. Kerwin, the man's a loony. Two already, he says.
I was kicked into a dank cell and my fever worsened. For 2 months, I raved about a monster, about the principles of biochemistry, electrical currents, about Elizabeth's eyes and neck and arms. I dreamed that the monster's fingers were at my throat, never choking me, but there. I saw the monster's scar of a face and all who came near me.
No!
Mr. Frankenstein, please, you must eat.
Keep away from me!
You are very ill and you need some sustenance.
Why do you mock me? Why do you not kill me, fiend? Kill me!
Mr. Frankenstein, my name is Kerwin. I am the magistrate of this region. You think I'm someone else? Fine. But I will not have you tossing your food on the floor and shrieking through the night. No prisoner of mine will be starving with a plate in front of his face. If you long for me to kill you, then you'll have to live until your case comes to trial and I pronounce you guilty.
Elizabeth, will you?
Mr. Frankenstein, please, eat. I will be checking in the morning whether you do.
Eventually, I recovered. The fever subsided and the hallucinations ceased.
Mr. Frankenstein?
Magistrate Kerwin.
You are sitting up, I see. Good. Good.
My body is upright, but I assure you, Magistrate, my soul is bent.
Water?
No, thank you. I sustain myself on nightmare and evil memory.
Ah. Mr. Frankenstein, I have come to tell you that, well, I think you are innocent.
Really?
Yes.
There, of course, must be a trial, but despite your distress, your character and upbringing are apparent, and the former has been vouched for. After you fell sick, your papers, sir, were brought to me, and I instantly wrote Geneva. But you are still somewhat ill and unfit for agitation.
Oh, God! So I want to... What has happened to them? What new scene of death
is... No. Your family is perfectly well. And someone, a friend, has come to visit you. But I wanted to...
No, I cannot see him! For God's sake, do not let him enter! Can you not see that he is a demon?
I should have thought, young man, that your father would have been welcome instead of inspiring violent repugnance.
My father!
Yes!
My father indeed has come. Where is he? Why does he not hasten to me?
That's the one.
Washed up with blood in his boat, all that damn...
The grand jury acquitted. It was proven that I was on the Orkney Islands at the time that Clerval was strangled. Yet, thinking backward, I reasoned I had disposed of the chemicals and the parts an hour before the first edge of dawn, which meant the monster moved with greater speed than I thought possible. To have arranged his angry joke, he must be swifter than the antelopes of the Alps. The return to Geneva was agony. At every bump, I instinctively swiveled my sunken face to search for the fiend. My father was a monument of patience, patting my hand and offering me indulgent smiles along the way, even as we rode into the green fields that surround our home.
The worst is over, son. We're home now.
Victor! Father!
Elizabeth! Careful of the horses! Stop the carriage!
Victor Frankenstein, never, ever leave this place again. I love you too much.
I love you too much.
Marry me this week.
Oh, well, Victor, what do you say?
I accepted, although I doubt I showed her the eagerness she wished to see. The cup of life was poisoned forever. Around me was nothing but a dense and frightful darkness, penetrated only by the glimmer of two yellow, clouded eyes.
No! Congratulations, children! This gives me more gladness than I have for some time experienced. Your union was the last hope of your mother, and it is a lasting pleasure for me to see that hope succeed. From the day we adopted you, Elizabeth, and saw the two of you together at play, we knew the quality of your love. Let that love continue for all your lives! Oh, yeah.
Thank you, Father. Mm.
Thank you, Father.
Smile, Victor. What is it? You're not beginning to tire?
No, you cannot tire yet.
I was missing Mother, is all, with all the talk. To Mother.
To Mother.
To Mother. You are so silent.
Am I?
Are you lost in the beauty of the lake?
Perhaps. Perhaps in the beauty of you.
Oh, God, I scarcely believe it, yet we are here, rowing across the lake to Evian for a honeymoon, witnessed by the eternal snow of our favorite mountains. The water we swam in is 10-year-olds. Oh, look, you can see the fish. You can see the bottom. Victor, look, you can see every pebble. What a perfect day. Something whispers to me not to depend too much on the prospect that is open before us, but it is too romantic.
What whispers to you?
Oh, my anxiety is all, and you've been so sick, But that is behind us. And as of tonight, we can exchange more than touch and a look now. At last.
At last.
Victor, was there ever another?
Another? No, good God, no.
Oh, thank heavens. I was convinced there was. Sometimes you wrote so little and seemed so distracted.
Elizabeth, I cannot remember a time when you...
And I began wondering if because we were raised together that your emotions could not be really romantic, that even though I am adopted, you think of me as a...
I do think of you as a sister, but that does not negate the force of...
And that maybe the stares and the smiles were only adoration and that...
Elizabeth, stop. You are the thing I was searching for.
You do love me.
Yes.
You were not bullied into this by me, by Father, by our mother's hopes?
No.
No?
No. I have always wanted you, Elizabeth. And I will fight to keep you.
Fight to keep me? You needn't fight. I am yours. We are married.
Right. We are married.
Now kiss me, like you wanted to when we were young but didn't dare.
No sooner than we landed, it began to storm. Clouds swept across the sky like vultures, and the sun retreated. Rain beat against the window panes of our cabin. I startled at the creaking walls as the wind shook against the house. All day long, even at the ceremony, a pistol had been tucked into my jacket. For a few minutes, I left Elizabeth to check the windows and the doors. I heard her humming as she undressed, giggling. She was happy. Before the wedding, I wanted to die. I wanted the fiend to rip me apart. So painful was the poison of guilt in all of my organs. But after crossing the lake with her, I was resolved. I would live. I would shoot the craven beast in its borrowed heart and burn its bones. Let it come, I thought. Ah! Elizabeth! No! Ah!
Unhand me!
No! Me! Kill me!
Hello, father.
No! No! Back away from her!
What is it like, father? The loneliness.
I said back away from her!
All the bullets in that gun will not kill me. I am not a man.
Stand aside or we shall see.
I will stand wherever I please.
No!
No!
Yes, there. You are close to feeling what I feel.
The report of the pistol brought a crowd from the town.
I thought it was the man's wife.
Together we followed the boot tracks, but in vain. The creature surely had swam across the lake before we began to search. I returned to Geneva with all possible speed, every mile, imagining my frail father writhing under the demon's grasp. I found him unharmed. However, the shock was profound at so advanced an age. He died within the week. I saw them both buried. I stood at their tombs blank while the sun dropped out of the sky. A coldness crept into me. My mind turned into frost, my heart into a blue glacial hate. I knelt on the grass, I kissed the earth, and I vowed, by the spirits of the dead, by the deep and eternal grief that I am, by thee, O night, I swear this hellish monster will drink deep of agony! Coward, reveal yourself!
I am happy you have decided to live. I was momentarily concerned you might gather the courage to cut yourself while shaving. The funeral was quite moving. Pardon me. I mean, the funerals. There were two, were there not?
Ha ha ha! I darted toward the spot from which the sound proceeded, but the devil eluded me. And so my wanderings began. I have traversed a vast portion of this earth, hunting for the fiend over deserts and through barbarous countries. Many times I have stretched my limbs upon the sandy plain and prayed for death, but revenge has kept me alive. Sometimes villagers, scared by his horrid apparition, informed me of his path. Sometimes he himself left writing on the barks of trees.
Prepare. Your toils only begin. Wrap yourself in furs and provide food, for we shall soon enter upon a journey where your sufferings will satisfy my everlasting...
Mr. Frankenstein, are you all right? Shall I send for the ship's chaplain? To Mrs. Margaret Saville, England, 12 September. Dear sister, now you have read this strange and terrific story, do you not feel your blood congeal? For myself, I was incredulous at first. I began by writing out the details of this horrific yarn, thinking that I would catch him in an inconsistency. But there were none. And I saw the thing, Margaret. I saw it on the ice. Frankenstein also produced letters written by the cottagers whom the monster claimed to love. The story is connected. And so his passing wounds me. Yes. He died tonight. He warned me of my curiosity as his voice grew faint and a gentle smile spread. Hello? Hello? Great God, Margaret, the creature came aboard. He hung over the remains of Frankenstein, his face covered by long locks of ragged hair, one vast hand extended toward his maker, the color and apparent texture of a mummy. Hideous!
What do you want?
Your repentance is now superfluous. If you had listened to the voice of conscience...
Am I to be thought the only criminal when all humankind sinned against me?
Hypocritical fiend! You throw a torch into a pile of buildings, and when they are consumed, you sit among the ruins and lament the fall!
Yes, mock me! The miserable and the abandoned, the abortion to be spurned and kicked and trampled on, yes. Mock me, make my blood boil, make me more dangerous than I am.
You lament only because your victim is withdrawn from your power.
So you think, and so you hate. You hate. You hate me, but your abhorrence cannot equal that with which I regard myself. Fear not, Captain, that I shall be the instrument of future mischief. No, my work is nearly complete. I shall quit your vessel, seek the northernmost extremity of the globe, collect my funeral pile, and consume to ashes this miserable frame. He is dead who called me into being, and when I am no more, the remembrance of us both will speedily vanish. I shall no longer see the sun or the stars, or feel the wind play upon my cheeks. Light, feeling, and sense will pass away. And in this oblivion, I must find my happiness.
He sprung from the cabin window as he said this, upon an ice raft which lay close to the vessel. He was borne away by waves, soon lost in the dark distance, leaving me insensible, Margaret, gaping, stupefied by his grotesquery. Until, at last, the memory of Frankenstein's warning sounded through me. I woke my men, and in a silent snow we turned our ship to the south.
Plan B's Radio Hour Frankenstein was adapted by Matthew Ivan Bennett, directed by Cheryl Ann Clough. The actors are Teresa Sanderson as Elizabeth, Tobin Atkinson as the monster, myself as Victor Frankenstein, and Jay Perry as pretty much everybody else. The music was created and performed by Dave Evanoff. The sound effects were designed by Corey Thorell, performed by Jennifer Freed and Sam Molnar. The sound engineer is Mark Robinette. The set was designed by Randy Rasmussen, and the lighting was created by Jennifer Z. Zorno. Plan B's producing director is Jerry Rapier. Our thanks to the Salt Lake County Center for the Arts, Jeff William, and Christian Mansfield. Radio West is a production of KUER News. Our thanks tonight to Mike Anderson. Our engineer is Lewis Downey. The show is directed today by our operations manager, Michael Havey. Radio West is produced by Elaine Clark. I'm Doug Fabrizio.